And welcome to the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. We are on the 3rd of October 2025. And this week was me, Kate, joined by Oli and Benga. Hello, both of you. What did you make of the session? What was your highlights of this episode?
I feel cookies is always an interesting, you know, relatable conversation to have, more especially when it comes to dual hacks, you know, review of the fines, IA fines to pay and stuff like that. I liked how engaging it was. I liked the fact that we could tell people, you know, there are the mistakes to look out for in the cookie banners and, you know, what we actually see in practice. So yes, overall, I give it a 10 out of 10 conversation and, you know, hopefully there'll be a second episode. That's me.
What about you, Oli? What did you think?
I enjoyed talking about the French data protection regulator's new action against companies and the new and emerging controversy of consent or pay models and how it compares to the GDPR's actual definition of consent.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think my favorite topic, we covered a lot, didn't we? We talked about fines, Google, particularly around the Google fine and the machine one. We talked about the DUACs, the new cookies and the changes, any feedback on that. Yeah. What we talked about, like cookies across borders outside the UK. But actually, I would say that my favorite topic was exactly that, the consent or pay. And actually going through what this means freely given, isn't it? It's always consent under the UK GDPR needs to be freely given and informed and very granular, etc. And I feel that the consent or pay, even that they say, yes, it's freely given, I don't think it is. There is a lot of controversy around this, a lot of guidance. And I feel this is a very good topic to talk about. I'm sure that will be a second session on this particularly. But I feel that we will leave it to you to listen to the episode. And I hope you enjoy it. Were you up to this week? For those, again, that don't know Oli and Benga, Benga is a data protection consultant. Oli works with us in DPP on the support desk. I think probably a quick hello and a brief update on how you're getting along and how is being DPP now.
Hello, everyone. I'm Holly on the support desk. I love working for DPP.
No pressure, Holly. You're all right.
I've been here since May, and I thought I'll get stuck in on the podcast.
Yes. Hi, everyone. My name is Benga, and I'm a data protection consultant, and I also work with DPP. And I've been with DPP for over 6 months now, though it feels like more than a year.
Yes.
But then we've done
only 6 months.
Yes, but then we've done very amazing big stuff together and hoping forward to more things.
Oh, thank you very much. I felt that there was a lot of pressure on that side. Sorry for that. So what are you up to this week? Anything exciting? We had the baking yesterday, didn't we?
We did. That was so lovely. Everyone made such an effort. And, well, we partnered up with Kate on a really big project that will be over soon. So I'm very excited for that.
And you're making a great job. Thank you. What about you, Benga?
Oh, yes. For me, as for my week, I have been deep in some audits. So finalize and working with a Premier League football club, conducting a GDPR assessment. So that's ongoing. Then personally, I am also working with a gaming developing company. And there's this big project coming on board, which entails me to do more research, more compliance and data protection work. Of course, I think I'm enjoying it. So far, so good, not bad. Then on a more personal level, I am buzzing that we are finally getting to talk about this cookie stuff. I think for too long, cookies have been this boring afterthought thing. Mm-hmm. But with the fines now eating hundreds of millions now, I think people are now starting to pay more attention. So yes, my week has been good. Yesterday was, exciting to had cookies to eat, cakes and lots of stuff.
That was a very good introduction for the matter. No, I do agree with you. I think And lately, I think we chose like the cookie, talking about cookies today in the podcast, because lately has been a lot going on about the cookies in the world, I feel. A lot of news around fines being applicable to organizations that do not comply with the cookie regulations, new legislations, the DEO Act in particular, guidance. And I think we had a chance to, me, Benga and Nolly, speak about this before as a podcast prep, about some of the fines that were being applicable about the cookies. I think Shein and Google were fined, weren't they?
Yes.
A whopping 150 million euros.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah. The French regulator caught them out for installing cookies on people's devices as soon as they open the website with no consent banner or anything. So that was a big fine. So people are starting to take interest. I know, Benga, you mentioned something about Google earlier as well.
Yeah, so similarly, on the 1st of September 2025, the French privacy regulator, the CNIL, slapped Google with a whopping sum of 325 million euros fine. And that's about, in my calculations, almost about 275 million British pounds. So what did Google do?
Two things.
First, Gmail ads. So you know these ads that show up between your emails in Gmail, in the promotions, social tabs and so stuff. Google were displaying these ads without getting your consent first. So the CNIL said, no, you can't do this. These are advertisements and you need to ask for permission first. So secondly, Google was also doing something probably I like to call cookie sneakiness. When you create a Google account, Google were dropping advertisement cookies on your device even before you give consent, which means they were tracking you from the moment you started the sign-up process. So think about something like, imagine you have a home and you're at home on a very bright morning and someone walks in and starts putting advertisements on your walls without asking. That's what, you know, Google were doing in your email box. And the French regulator said, no, you need to ask permission first. And it cost Google a whopping sum of 325 million euros. This for me shows one thing, that regulators are now getting serious about cookies in 2025. And here's the thing, if a very large organization such as Google, the company that probably basically invented, you know, online advertisements, if they can't get cookie compliance right, what chance do smaller organizations have?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. Yeah.
It's not supposed they can't get it right. They probably didn't want to get it right. You know, and 325 million euros is probably a drop in the ocean for them. But everyone's made, in the past, have all made, I think, made commercial decisions. You know, we know that what the rules have been, you know, but I think partly commercial decisions. And the other thing is that every time we've done a cookie audit, and I think we did one with you, Benga, nobody's got cookies under control. They're a very hard thing to get under control. So, you know, you might try and figure out what cookies you got on, but, you know, it's not the NED scanning tools. There's no kind of management rigor around them, no processes for approving them usually. So, yeah, it's a big wake-up call. But I don't think that Google have been trying particularly hard to get it right, if I'm being quite honest about it.
No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think exactly I feel that this is good for like public awareness in terms of even if these massive organizations, they actually are treated in obviously in the same level in a data breach. But one thing that the fact that the CNIL was involved in both of this kind of made me feel that CNIL that actually tested the site, that tested the services directly, not just the policy, not just the cookie banner review, actually were the technical side of it, and made me think that sometimes going just making sure, oh, the cookie banner is compliance and actually the policy actually matches with the cookies is not, obviously is not enough. And the fact that the cookie is being placed despite refusal is absolutely a major, major, major breach. And I feel that this only confirms where I think is a well obvious, but sometimes well can be not be very obvious, is the technical implementation must obviously match what is the legal design of the things. And I feel that even for public awareness is better than nothing. So I agree 100% that this will be like a drop probably in the world of Google and even Shein, but I think is good. I think is a good first step at least for awareness.
It's also very fitting that it's the French who are known for their revolution to kickstart this off as well.
Yeah. Well, I have a theory. I reckon Joe Kirk's got a job at the Canal, and that's because he was very much about cookies. Yeah.
We're talking about being the cookies. Like, oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
No, 100%.
So what exposure have you had to cookies in terms of your work, Holly? Do you get many cases in to look at? You know, and much advice to give?
Yeah, look, a fair amount of cookie policies, and with the new doer changes as well, a lot have been rolling in because a lot of organisations have been unsure about what this means for them. So, we've just been going through changing policies, changing banners as well. We get a lot of that to make sure there's no, you know, pre-tick boxes, things such as that. But yeah, mostly just doer stuff.
Mm. And your gaming client, Banger, you know, they must be tracking performance in games and things of that nature. Is that all cookies, or is it pixels and other clever technologies, or is it, you know, what kind of things are they utilizing?
It's a mix of things, but majorly cookies. And in fact, I came to realize that 20% of their database is actually from the US, not from the UK. So which means they have to comply not just with the GDPR here, the cookies, the PICA. They also have to confirm with the COPPA in the US and other regulators and everything. But in practice, I've seen so many scary stuff from like Oli said, false predicted consent boxes, which is still happening in 2025. And this has been very illegal for years. Then also, one thing that is prominent is the unequal prominence. They accept all in a green big button, while reject all is buried deep, three clicks, you know, deep in settings and stuff, which is not so cool. Then also, I've seen loads of vague, confusing messages on the cookie banners that don't clearly explain what is happening to the T-shirt.
So we've called this cracking the cookie code. You know, is that what we're going to do? Are we going to crack it? I'm throwing a bit of a hand grenade in here. You know, what's
We're done. Now, I'm thinking
easy
like
to crack?
That's a very hard question.
We're giving it a go.
We're going to give it a go. I think probably the fact that the Banger now mentioned a very good point. I feel that the fact with your client Banger in terms of the gambling and the gaming stuff, the fact that you need to rely not only on the UK legislation but as well, obviously across borders. I feel that sometimes that can be a little harder in a sense of understand exactly where the cookies are placed and to have different legislations for all of them. And I feel that probably there's something that can happen now with the DUA Act versus, for example, the e-privacy. Now that with the DUA Act that just amended the PECA, included like some exemptions where consent will not be required for certain types of cookies, with the main purpose of actually make it easier for the less burden to the organizations, I would say. But I think that's what actually happened with the EU privacy rules on the cookies. And I feel that can be challenging.
Very well. Yes, I agree. Again, the DUA Act is now in enforcement and, you know, first, the big changes. One, it's no longer £500,000 of the fines. ICU is now saying that it's 4% of the global turnover, which can be a lot even more greater or more higher in terms of the amount, more than the £500,000. And of course, I think the DUA Act, the ICU UK GDPR, has now relaxed the cookies, which means you do not need consent for, you know, so many things like before. For example, analytical cookies, you know, if it can be done correctly, you do not need consent for it again.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think, to be honest, this can be, there are benefits, I think, aren't there? Like, I think kind of, I feel that with the cookies that they are being, within the exceptions of the necessary cookies not relying on consent, I think can be kind of potential benefits around it, like kind of reduce the, what we call like consent fatigue, like in terms of like always being bombarded every single time you go with the banners and accept all and reject all and preferences and understand, etc. And actually can bring pragmatism, because I feel, and completely, because again, this is something that is being implemented, is still under consultation at the ICO, and guidance is being still about to be released. But I feel that the cookies that we are talking about here are considering like low risk so in terms of like the others. But I feel sometimes that if the organizations are not careful, I feel that can be like a risk of a scope creep. So the fact that the statistical purposes and functionality kind of go, okay, the business will like, okay, this is a statistical purpose, so consent will not be required at all. So why will I consent now? I don't think so. I think we need to be careful, I think.
I absolutely agree. Again, like I said, when you deep dive into the DORA Act, it says some cookies might not need consent anymore. And this type of cookies are one, analytics cookies, if it is set up right. Appearance cookies, if you remember that you're on a dashboard or something. Mm. Then statistical cookies, if anonymized. So again, I feel the ACTIO is actively checking up about probably one top 1,000 websites, and they have bigger fines now to hand out. But think about it like it's a case of the UK government just gave the ICO a bigger stick to eat you with.
Yeah.
You know, though they said some of the cookies are okay without consent, but the trick is knowing which is. When you get it wrong, the bigger stick is coming your way immediately.
Yes.
It's a very dicey situation.
It's a good one.
Yeah. So which means as an organization, a data controller, you must now be able to differentiate to which of these type of cookies needs consent and which don't, which is very, very tricky.
I think and it will be very good to, again, I feel that every single time we talk about the Act and the changes, I feel that I always say that we need the ICO guidance. We need the ICO to come and say something about it.
I feel that...
Ollie, and I don't know, but do you feel that having like this cookie stuff is complicated now, obviously considering the experience that you have? I actually feel with it.
It's definitely made it more good. What is that?
It's a cookie monster.
Yeah, no, I definitely feel that the DORA has made things a lot more complicated, especially for organizations, because you get a lot of cases in where they're in a complete panic and they're like, what does this mean for us? And, you know, it's just a simple thing like, oh, you know, it's just these cookies that you can be considered necessary now and things like that. It's just guiding them through the advice, but it's definitely complicated things for some people.
Yeah, I agree. I had actually a client that... we are talking about strategies around the DORA Act and particularly around cookies, because we're doing some work around cookies. And they made the point of, oh, but we actually have websites and, cookies actually being all over the Europe, the EU, and then with the UK. Obviously, the DORA Act only applies to the UK, right?
It's like, yeah.
I mean, obviously for us, I think that was a logical step. But the very fair question, because... we actually shared this, no matter. And actually, it was a very good point, because obviously, what does that mean in practice? Because you will have EU visitors, you will have UK visitors, and there are different legislations that will be applicable. And for Bank on this case, the US visitors with different states and laws that will be applicable. So I think, what are the actually... By default, what should be the mechanisms? So should, I think the organizations in this case could have or different, well, mechanisms for each kind of visitor, bearing in mind. Or even in the worst case scenario, not the worst, but just follow the stricter rules, because it will be always compliant on that sense. And they are already being applicable more or less, regardless. So I know that at least with OneTrust, they already have kind of a geolocation specific for each cookies, and that you can control a little bit that. But I feel that some of those questions will come along, and it's important to give a thought about that.
Yes, but then for my own analogy, this is what I tell people in practice. You know, think about this: strictly necessary cookies, you know, allowed without consent. That's what they're trying to say. So think about the fact that you're probably trying to enter someone's home. So strictly necessary cookies, just like fixing the boiler. And if you need to go into probably the kitchen or whatever to fix the broken heating system, the essential service, you can enter, you know. Right. But then if you want to go into looking around, taking pictures of their stuff, see what they own, you know, you need to ask permission first. So if it is, you know, the essential service strictly necessary for the website to function properly, then okay, no consent. But any other thing to be on the safeguard and safe mode, I think you definitely should ask consent.
I'm applauding.
Definitely. And so the thing that I think is really a grey area in regards to consent is consent or pay models. I think spoke a lot about this.
Good point.
Yeah. Yeah, the consent or pay models are tricky, aren't they?
Yeah, and Kate, you shared an article with us that discussed how, well, consent fatigue nowadays. And with the introduction of these consent or pay models, people are just clicking anyway, trying to get the thing out of the way so they can access the website. And I think it's just such a grey area.
I agree. I agree.
It's not necessarily freely given, I don't think.
No, I think that's exactly it. I thought this actually came, we were talking, me and Ollie, yesterday, and I was trying to just do some podcast prep, and I was trying to access the Guardian website to see the news, and automatically came through, okay, so or you pay a monthly subscription of £4 without advertisements, or you need to accept all cookies. And you will have the advertisement, but you will always have to set the access to the news. And so this is so wrong. And I did some digging, and I saw that actually there was obviously this kind of I think we all have over it because we were talking in previous podcast episodes. This emblematic case with Meta and European Commission about the Digital Markets Act, where basically the commission found that Meta's original consent or pay offering did not present the users with a specific choice or of a less personalized but equivalent alternative, and did not enable users to actually give a free consent. And I feel that actually the EU and the UK, have, both of them have kind of a test to understand if the consent or pay is valid. The EU is two cumulative conditions. The UK, the ICO presents with actually four, giving more focus in a power of imbalance and appropriate fee. But I feel that with a consent or pay, the question relies on, is it freely given, the consent? I don't think it is.
I don't think so.
While I was researching about this consent or pay thing, whether it's legal or not, so this is what I found. So Meta, Facebook and Instagram, potentially, you know, came up with this, what I called clever plan. They said to European users, option one, let us show you personalized ads, you know, give us your data. Or B, pay us €10 per month for no ads. And that was a consent or pay. And it sounds fair, to be fair. But then the European Commission said no. And in April 2025, they fined Meta about €200 million because of that. And they said this is not real consent. It's basically blackmail. It's more like, you know, give us your phone password or pay me £10. That's not free choice.
Yeah, but surely if your personal data is worth £10 a month, you know, the model should be pay me £10 a month to use my data to buy personalized ads. Or I'll pay you £10.
Yeah. Yes. So consent to me has to be freely given, you know, and in this case, I don't think it is. But if the alternative is paying money, is it really, really that free? That's what the EU is saying, that no, this is not, you know, freely given. This is not specific. It's more like, you know, you are in a restaurant and a restaurant says, oh, you have free Wi-Fi, but you have to give them your email. You have to agree to marketing and stuff. So is that really free Wi-Fi? So because without giving them these things, that's really not free Wi-Fi. So the law says proper consent means you can say no without losing out. But the concept about this, you know, pay or consent is either you pay or you don't pay or you lose out.
Yes, exactly. So you don't have access to. I think that's exactly it. I think my questions around this is like the freely given consent and if it's actually freely given. And the fact that I think is a recital 43, I think, that says that should, if you withdraw consent, should no be no detriment to the, actually the data subject. And I feel that the fact that all this together, the user should not be should not lose essential access or be penalized if they revoke consent in regardless of the ways. And I feel that there is this tension about the freely given consent, no detriment to the data subjects, but actually, if you paid, so you have a real choice, do you? Because you are putting these prices on actually necessary business. So, for example, news that I mentioned, like Guardian, you education and stuff. So actually, is it freely given? I don't think it is. I feel it is. I saw actually if ICO has a guidance around it, and it makes a question about what is the difference between consent or pay or take it or leave it approach. Because when we have in the website something like, oh, you need to accept our terms and conditions, if not, you are not actually have access to the website. It's true that they are, yes, you need to accept or not, and you don't have the website content. And on the other side, you have consent or you are paying for a service, so you have a choice. But I don't think it's a real choice if you are putting this kind of option in need services, I feel.
No, I definitely agree with you. I mean, I know The Sun have implemented it as well, another news source. Yeah, and I think I was looking for a recipe the other day and it came up there as well. It's really starting to pop up.
Mm.
But I'll be really interested to see if anyone's actually paid. Or, yeah, I genuinely paid for it. I mean, if you use that website every day and you don't really know any better, I imagine that you might, but yeah.
I mean, I didn't pay for the Guardian, that's for a fact. No, I will go for another one. And I'm assuming that you did not pay for the Stand as well.
What I've noticed as well is that if you use a mobile device to access the Guardian or other newspapers, you get this content or pay model. But if you use a laptop, I don't get that on the Guardian. You get a restriction to 30 articles, but you don't get the consent or pay blocker. So again, it seems to be that it's different platforms sometimes present you with different approaches. But again, how can that be consistent and fair?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's a very good point. I just open it now and it's literally just purchase Guardian at Light, £5 per month, or read the Guardian with personalized ads and go back to accept all cookies. So actually it's asking me to accept all cookies to have access to the website. And I'm talking about, a very well-known, I hope no one is here, I feel, with the Guardian, very well-known newspaper. But yeah, I think he's
I've not got that. I've opened up the Guardian now. Yeah, I've got the bit at the bottom, support £4 monthly. This is a subscription to the newspaper, though, not a consent or pay cookie model. But I'm straight into the Guardian. I can read the news stories, I got all the headlines. I've not been blocked from accessing it.
Have you accepted all cookies, Phil?
No, I never accept cookies. But I'm just showing my screen.
There is a discrimination between mine and yours.
So I'm in here. So it's counting the number of articles I've read. So it's must be using cookies to know how many articles I've read. But this is a subscription model, not a consent or pay model. And I can get rid of it.
Let me see mine. Let me just show. This is the one that I have.
Yeah, I've got one here on The Sun as well.
Yeah, it's the same.
Right. Inconsistent.
Oh, well. I'm actually curious to understand why.
I can share my screen for a sec if you want to see. Oh, wait. Make it big. Can you see? And it won't let you.
I think that a lot of the newspapers have gone the same way. They've probably all got the same service providers, you know, and might even have the same. When I worked in the football industry, virtually all the clubs had the same company providing all their websites, just a different skin on it. So all the technology behind the scenes was the same. That might be the case with some of the newspapers in the big groups anyway.
Oh, well. Well, we are on time. How is this possible? 30 minutes and it's gone.
Yes, just... Kate, just before we leave,
go.
I think we should talk about, you know, probably the top 5 mistakes to avoid when it comes to cookie banners and everything. So first, I think that the major one I see every time is the predict box.
Yeah, you know, 100%.
I still see this regularly in 2025, boxes that are already ticked. And as far as I'm concerned, as far as the ICO is concerned, this is not valid consent. And it's not advisable never to ever use predict boxes. Also, I feel I see loads of you can accept cookies, you know, accept all.
Yeah.
You know, but then I don't see the opposite, which is decline or reject all. You know, some organizations just put, oh, accept all, then manage your preferences without rejecting, the ability to reject. So I see that a lot. So I think that's another mistake to avoid when it comes to cookie compliance matters.
Phil, that's a near term of the ICO is watching you.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that's the second one is the one that I see the most with customers of ours, the not option of, well, reject all or manage your preferences is accept all or nothing else. Yes. One that I came across a long time is colors, related to colors. So I do have a lot to accept all, the big words, green. This is the right choice, guys. This is the one that you should go for it. And then a very small declined or manage your preferences, like very loose or reds or whites. So the colors that literally manipulated the user, and you should accept this, and actually should be exactly the opposite. The colors should not manipulate people to accept or reject, should be very neutral colors. So I would say that this would be my big one.
Very well. Also, in course of practice, I've seen conversations around people asking whether should they have a separate cookie policy, or should they place the cookie policy inside the general privacy notice.
I'd recommend having a separate cookie one, I think.
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay. You get some cookie policies that are really, you know, light and they don't have a lot of information, and some that go through like each cookie on a table. But the ones that are light, they'll just say, oh, we may use cookies for the XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
And for purposes of transparency as well, I just think it's good to have it as a separate document.
But is there really anything wrong with having the cookie policy inserted in the main privacy notice?
It's annoying for me to review. Only joking.
Just having everything in the same document.
Yeah.
Yes. Is there anything wrong with that, having, you know, the main cookie policy inserted?
I would not include that in my privacy notice, I would say. I mean, I don't think it will be a massive problem, but for me, I feel that they are different information. We're talking about privacy information on the privacy notice side. We're talking about cookie information. It's completely different matters, I would say, even if they are related. I would make potentially a recommendation in the privacy notice with, we use cookies, please have here a link for my cookie policy. But actually, they should be really available in the footer, because they are talking about different matters.
Right. Thank you. One more thing I'd like to talk about is I've seen so far so good. Many organizations can't evidence records of consent when it comes to cookies, you know, which means if the ICO comes auditing many organizations, they will probably fail the test when it comes to evidence and records of organizations. So I think one thing organizations should realize is to have a consent record, which is very, very important.
But I think what they would say is, look, we've got a robust technical mechanism for doing this, and they can't get past it. You just can't get past it. It's consent or pay. There's no workaround. Therefore, we don't need record to consent as such, because the fact that we're placing cookies and they're being through this technical mechanism means that they must have consented. They'll be able to back that up with code, and I would have, if I was defending that position, that's what I'd be saying.
Okay.
I know it's not the same as a record of consent.
Yes, it's not, to be fair.
No.
All right. Well, I personally still feel, regardless, you know, organizations should tend to have some evidence of records. You know, what date did I consent to these cookies? You know, how did I, stuff like that, in case of any audits that might potentially come up in case of any disputed cases. I mean,
is a consent cookie as well. So the first thing you do when you've consented is you get a consent cookie.
Yeah.
So again, if that is embedded within it, a time and a date stamp, then you would say, I would be saying that's a record of consent. I might be on a sticky wicket here, but I would be trying to construct myself a defensible position along those lines.
Okay.
I think Phil works for The Guardian.
Yeah. That's why the cookie monster was coming through.
Yeah.
yeah.
Right.
I'm afraid I've got to go. So if you're going to carry on, I will leave you to it. But I'm afraid I have to press on.
Thank you for joining us, Phil.
Thank
have a great
you.
Weekend.
Sorry
Thank
to have disrupted
much.
Things
have
as
weekend.
Ever. Have a nice weekend.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you,
right.
everyone.
Yes. Okay, what about
I think we are happy to go as well, guys, aren't we not? I think we ended pretty well with the kind of the main challenges for the cookies and what should do or not do. Anyway, thank you very much for joining. It was
thank
lovely.
You, Kate.
Kate,
go on, Ben. I know that you, go for it. Forgot, go on.
Assignments for the community.
Say it again, sorry.
Our assignments for everyone.
Yes, go for it. Yeah, go on.
No, probably only should go for it.
What?
Yeah. What's the suggestion that you did when you were doing podcast prep?
Yeah.
And asking people to share with us something. Don't you remember?
Pictures of your cookie banners.
Yeah. You are not being tested.
Yeah. If anyone wants to flash the cookie banners and we can go through, have a bit of an exercise. Compliant, not compliant.
Yeah, and to compare ourselves as well, and we could, that could be a good one, making this engagement. Well, we lost a few people, but we were just coming like going round circles. Well, thank you so much, guys. Have a good weekend. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.